Hello everyone. So it's a great pleasure for me to be here today to present you a recent study about the genomic signatures of natural selection in unmixed human populations. So evolutionary genetic studies have described a number of iconic cases of genetic adaptations in humans. These studies shed light on the environmental pressures that humans had to face as they settled the entire planet. And so these studies also were performed to identify the genes that underlie genetic adaptations in humans. And the way the geneticists identify these genes is to scan the genomes of different human populations for the signatures of a classic SWIP. So the classic SWIP model assumes that a de novo mutation occurs and reaches fixation in a single population. And so actually, these methods tend to assume implicitly that populations are isolated from each other. However, while the Pleistocene period for human evolution was indeed characterized by population isolation, we know now from ancient DNA and modern DNA studies that most populations are actually descended from a mixture between previously isolated populations. One well-characterized example is Europe, where most of contemporary populations are thought to descend from a mixture between at least three previously isolated populations of Western hunter-gatherers, farmers from Anatolia, or herders from the Pontic Steppe. So these results raise an important question in human evolution and evolutionary genetic studies more precisely. How can we detect the signatures of natural selection in the genomes of human populations if most of them are mixed? So a number of simulation studies have shown that admixture is expected to obscure the signatures of positive selection in unmixed populations. But here I need to emphasize the fact that the rationale of these studies was to find positive selection in the source populations because these source populations do not exist anymore in an unmixed form. So several methods have been developed to search for selection in the source populations, including admixture-aware methods such as Ohana, and also local ancestry masking, so that they could alleviate the problem that admixture is like obscuring signals. However, much less attention has been devoted to the detection of natural selection in the admixed population since admixture. I would argue that this approach is informative because we can learn about positive selection in humans that is ongoing and recent. As far as I know, the first study that scanned the genome of an unmixed human population to search for post-admixture selection is a study by Tong and colleagues in 2007, where they observed an excess of local ancestry from African populations in Puerto Ricans on chromosome 6. So other studies have used the same kind of approaches, using excesses of local ancestry from one given ancestral population compared to others, as well as deviations in allele frequencies from the expected allele frequency in the admixed population, such as the study by Hodgson and colleagues. However, no studies have really investigated the power of these approaches. More worrying, it has been also suggested that some signals of positive selection in unmixed populations could be due to false positives because of improperly modeled linkage disequilibrium by first generation local ancestry methods, sampling noise, or different biases. Also, it has been suggested that using proxy sources, I'll come back to that, could also result in false positives. And so globally, all these different caveats have precluded evolutionary geneticists to ask a very broad question: has admixture facilitated local adaptation in humans? So to try to ask this question, Sebastian Quados Espinoza, PhD student in our lab, has conducted with us a study, which objectives were first to perform extensive simulations of an admixture with selection model to try to estimate the power of different summary statistics to search for the signatures of positive selection in this admixture, and leverage the different statistics that were identified as powerful to uncover the new cases of post-admixture selection in the genomes of 15 admixed worldwide populations. So briefly, simulations were performed with SLIM. We simulated 2 megabase genomic regions with varying recombination rates and negative selection acting on codons. For most of the simulations, we assumed a single pulse admixture model, where an admixed population in the middle is descended from admixture between two source populations. I will tend to call source population one the one on the left, where a beneficial mutation is introduced, and the source population two on the right. But we also considered other admixture models, such as the two-pulse model or constant continuous admixture. And also, we simulated in some models sister populations from the source populations, the true source populations, to mimic the fact that we usually have proxies of these sources in the real data. So this model is in general characterized by 8 different parameters that we made vary across simulations. So we considered 5 different summary statistics in this study, simple statistics. So the first 2 statistics are what I would call like admixture aware, because they are based on admixture proportion estimates. The first one, we called it FM, is simply the square difference between the observed allele frequency in the population, in the admixed population, PAN, minus what I would call here pi, which is the expected frequency in the admixed population under admixture and neutrality. This is estimated in our case by simply computing the average of allele frequencies in the source populations weighted by admixture proportions. So briefly, the numerator term is actually the variance in allele frequencies in the admixed population expecting under neutrality and drift, as shown by Long in 1991. The other statistic is a statistic that has been regularly used in many studies. It's simply the difference between the local ancestry estimating in a given genomic window in the admixed population, minus its genome-wide average estimated by local ancestry, in this case with RFMix. We compared these 2 statistics, the power of these 2 statistics, with 3 other classical statistics that are used to detect positive selection at the SNP level. FST and DeltaDAF is computed between the admixed population and the source population when there is no selection, and IHS in the admixed population. Okay. So we start by comparing the power of these 5 different summary statistics in three different admixture with selection scenarios. In the first scenario, that I will call adaptive admixture, the beneficial mutation occurs in one of the sources, the one on the left. Then the mutation is transmitted to the admixed population, and the mutation remains beneficial in the admixed population. The second scenario, the beneficial mutation is also is present in the source population one, then it's transmitted to the admixed population, and then it becomes neutral at the time of admixture. In the third scenario, the mutation is neutral in the source population and becomes beneficial at the time of admixture. Okay, so because our goal is to search for selection since admixture, we would like to have statistics that are powerful in the scenario 1 and 3, but not in scenario 2. Okay, so when we compute work curves for the classic statistics, FST and IHS, assuming very strong selection, S equal 5%, we see a very strong power to detect the mutation, the beneficial mutation in the admixed population in the 3 scenarios, while in scenario 2, the mutation has become neutral. So this is not what we want to observe, okay? So Once we look at the power of the two admixture aware statistics, FAN in blue and LAD in green, we see that they have reasonable power to detect the beneficial mutation in the admixed population that is in scenario one, as well as in scenario three, but not in scenario two, which is the behavior we would like to observe. So because, again, we want to search for selection since admixture in the admixed population, we concentrated the subsequent analysis on FAN and LAD because they have virtually no power to detect mutations that become neutral in the admixed population, scenario two. Okay, so then we looked at the power of these two statistics under different admixture models. We wanted to know if the power was changing a lot if you assume a single pulse, a double pulse, or a constant continuous admixture model. We found not a lot of differences between these different models for both FAN in blue and LAD in green. So we, for the sake of simplicity, we considered only the single pulse model for the subsequent simulations. So next, we wanted to know if non-stationary demography could affect power. We simulated bottlenecks and expansions in the sources and admixed populations. And so, in short, we only found a reduced power, expectedly, when we have a bottleneck in the admixed population. And we found that, in general, FAN was more powerful than that in this case. Oops. Sorry. Conversely, we found an example where LAD is much more powerful than FAN. It is the case where we simulate a proxy population. So in this case, we use a proxy population for source one. So we simulate a sister group to the true source, the proxy here. The mutation, the beneficial mutation is present in the proxy. Okay. And in this case, with increasing genetic distance between the true source and the proxy, measured by FST here, we see that the power decreases quite fast for FAD, but not for LAD. Okay, more worrying, as suggested in the introduction, we identified a scenario where we could find false positives. So it's some kind of a relatively unlikely scenario, but still, it's possible. This is the case where we have a proxy, and the mutation is advantageous only in the proxy population. So in this case, we tend to observe deviations in FAN and LAD, but the deviation is not the one you may expect. We see an excess of the local ancestry from the other source population on the right, and not the one on the left. So based on these results, we thought we could actually exclude these kind of cases where we see a strong signal of positive selection in source population one and an excess of local ancestry from source population two. So this is what we did. So finally, we also wanted to see how the power of these statistics change with the main parameters of the admixture with selection model, namely the selection coefficient represented by rows, the admixture time represented by the x-axis, and the admixture proportions on the y-axis. So briefly and expectedly, we see that power increases with the selection coefficient, and we tend to suggest that we have power only if s is larger than 5%, which is quite large. Also, we find that power is increasing as the time of admixture increases, also expected. In this case, I would say that power is sufficient when that mixture occurred at least 2,000 years ago, depending on S. And finally, less expected, we found that there is a lower power when alpha, the admixture proportion, increases. So here, this is the alpha, the contribution from population one, the one where the selective mutation is segregating. So in this case, we see that the higher alpha, the lower the power. We suggest this is because when alpha is large, there is less room for observed allele frequencies and also observed local ancestry to deviate from their expected values. Okay, so next we used these two statistics to search for the signatures of post-admixture selection in 15 different populations worldwide. to gain power and to also facilitate the prioritization of outliers, we combined the two statistics in a very simple way, but it works. We used the ranks of these SNPs for both FAM and LAD at the genome-wide level. We converted that into empirical p-values, and we combined these p-values with a Fisher's method. So we end up with a single statistic. The interest of doing that is that the final statistic follows the chi-square distribution, and it under different demographic models. Sorry, and it deviates strongly from expectations under selection because the two statistics are correlated only under selection. We also gain power by using the Fisher score in darker blue here in a number of unfavorable scenarios. So we could compute then the p-value for each SNP in the genome in each admixed population. And the striking result we obtained from the very beginning was a very strong signal on chromosome 1 in different populations. It's actually the same signal observed in African descent populations from the Sahel, Madagascar, and Pakistan, the Makrani. These signals tag a genomic region where the Akron gene is. So Akron1 is coding for the Duffy blood group. And so these results suggest that the Duffy null allele that is associated with resistance against Plasmodium vivax malaria has been under ongoing and recent selection in different parts of different regions of the world. This is also supported by epidemiological data because we know that regions where there is unstable transmission, mostly in sub-Saharan Africa, are regions where this mutation is almost fixed, represented by the dashed lines, while the places where we see evidence for ongoing selection in the form of post-admixture selection are regions where there's still stable transmission of the pathogen. That is in Madagascar, in Sahel, eastern part of Sahel, and Pakistan. So this is really a nice example of ongoing selection. And we tend to reinforce the idea that this pathogen is responsible for selection at the locus. We also find signals for genes that are well known to be under natural selection, including the lactase gene. We see a signal of post-admixture selection in the Fulani, where it seems like the European lactase persistent allele has been selected. And we see a signal in Bantu speakers from East Africa, where it's the East African allele that is selected. We also find a large deviation in local ancestry and allele frequencies at the HLA locus in Bantu-speaking populations from Western Central Africa, as well as Mexicans. These are like known signals. We also identify some new cases. One case is an excess of non-African ancestry at the APOL1 locus in the Fulani. So APOL1 is a well-known gene that confers protection against sleeping sickness, as well as susceptibility for kidney disease. We also have other signals, including a signal at the insulin growth factor 1 receptor locus in Solomon Islanders, and two signals in East Indonesians, including protein kinase N2 and TNF-AIP3, a gene that is known to be adaptively introgressed in Papuan populations. And it's actually an excess of Papuan ancestry that we see in East Polynesians. So just to conclude, we find that FADM and LAD are suited to a search for loci under positive selection in admixed populations in submixture, particularly when S is large, when the time of admixture is relatively old, like 2,000 years, and when the admixture proportion is lower than 60%. We also find that in some cases, FAN outperforms LAD, such as the case where selection occurs only in the unmixed population and not in the source. We also find that LAD sometimes outperforms FAN, such as when the proxy source is distantly related to the true source. We confirmed that some of the previous results identified by LAD only, such as an excess of HLA, an African ancestry at the HLA locus, is probably true and not due to unmodeled linkage disequilibrium, because we also find a signal using allele frequency deviations. We show in general that post-admixture selection has primarily targeted immune-related genes, which testify to the strong pressures imposed by microbes on humans. We believe that detecting adaptive admixture signals is of interest because it enables to detect a strong ongoing selection, and also it could help refining correlations between selection signatures as well, with environmental pressures, as for the Duffinil allele. And quick perspectives. First, we really expect that new methods could improve power for different reasons. Local ancestry inference can be improved. We could use other statistics than FAN and LAD, for example. I'm thinking about IDAT, which has been developed by Amy Goldberg. I'm really expecting that model-based approaches will be more informative to increase power and combine these different statistics. And also, you will hear about another method by Garrett there this afternoon that integrates the detection of selection in both the unmixed and the source populations, which is an interesting avenue. So in general, these results tend to suggest that indeed admixture may have facilitated adaptation in humans. This also raises the question of how much of this process has been important for other non-human structured species. Actually, some of the answers are already known from theoretical work by mainly Montgomery Slatkin in the 80s and also Land. And I'm going to cite simply the sentence here from Monti, where he says that gene flow has an important evolutionary role in species with unstable population structures, either because of frequent extension and recolonization of local populations or because of occasional large-scale changes in geographic range, which is typical of humans, but not only. So I'm expecting that these approaches will be useful for other species that are cosmopolitan or invasive, for example. And so with this, I would like to thank the members of the lab, including Sebastien there, who did most of the work, and also Guillaume and Louise for their advice and the financial support. Thanks.